Hey there, and welcome back to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I was going to make a joke that this was take two, and then I almost butchered take two. That was solid. My name is Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And we, for the next hour or so, will be talking sports with you, learning a little bit about what's going on with the high school football team, the high school soccer team, right here in Bedford, and also talking about some of the other stuff that going on in the world of sports. I have to say, though, last week I was in New Orleans taking the call from there. I kind of like my locale last week a little bit better than I like this week.
Well, that's great, but I like your locale this week. It's kind of nice to see you across the desk here.
I'm here.
I'm in a different chair this week. I've moved about 3 feet across the studio. You've moved a little bit farther since last week.
Yeah, I moved a little farther. I had a really good August. A lot of travel, a lot of messing around. Even earlier this week, I went up to Meredith to meet with a client, and the meeting ended, and one of their colleagues walked in and said, I have to go show one of my clients their property on Winnipesaukee from a boat. Do you want to go?
And twist my arm.
Right. My client's like, yeah, you should go. I said, I didn't have anything on the calendar, so off I went.
Good times.
Onto a boat on Winnipesaukee drinking mimosas. So that was 3 days out of four that I got to drink champagne that day because we were celebrating these people buying a new house. The day before, because one of my neighbors so kindly brought champagne to the bus stop because it was the first day of school. Shows you how your perspective changes when you have kids. And when you're a kid, all you can think about is when summer's starting. You have that day marked on your calendar and you're just ignoring it and praying that it doesn't exist. And
it doesn't change because of snow days.
No, it doesn't change. Or because it rains. Yeah, we're going to extend summer a couple days. Oh, that's a good idea, though. I'm sure the governor would get behind that. So as much as I'm bummed out that summer ends, it's nice to be able to focus on work for a bit without people walking in and talking to me about snacks or TV or going to see a friend.
Yeah.
I was bummed to see summer done. However, it was really nice to have somebody come to the bus stop with some champagne. And then Monday was a champagne free day. And then Sunday we had some celebrating the championship won by the Granite State Baseball League's over 38 Bedford Bisons. Or bison, depending on how much English you like with your baseball. But the bison or bisons, as it were, picked up their third title in a row. It's a luxury that you have when you have a former major leaguer on the mound to to close out the championship game for you.
That does help. That does help for the over 38 league.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, he pitched. His name's Mike Welch. Pitched for the Phillies back in 1998, and it's nice having that guy getting up there. He's an intimidating presence out there on the mound, and it was, in true weird baseball fashion, it was, I don't remember how the leadoff man got on that inning. He stole second. Welch, who has power to spare, lays down, he's a left-handed hitter, lays down a beautiful little sack bunt down the third baseline. That gets the runner to third, and then a sack fly brings in the eventual game-winning run in the bottom of the eighth. So, get three outs and enjoy champagne.
What does Mike hit on the radar gun these days?
I don't know, and I'm not radarized enough to even guess. I know that there were points in time years ago that he had to be touching 90, because it was, I remember playing shortstop at that point. This was like 6 years ago, and it was boring playing shortstop. Like, you sit there and you count pitches because guys just couldn't touch him. Guys can hit him now, but his curveball is just, it falls off the table. Like, he mixes it up well, and there's the confidence of knowing that, obviously, you've been there before. Dude gets up on the mound, and that's a lot to deal with if you're Sunday rec league ball player.
Yeah, that would be fun to play short behind that, because if somebody actually does put the ball in play, it's probably a weak grounder.
It's a weak ground, or if they somehow hit it on the screws, I mean, it travels a bit, but that's because he's supplying the power. So champagne 3 out of 4 days, took a couple days off, and now it's Friday, and we're here, and it's a good spot to be. So, and a lot going on in the world of sports, too.
Yeah, and you mentioned baseball. There's been some big news this week from all the way from Little League to the major leagues. Where do you want to start?
Do you want to start at the majors, work our way down?
Okay.
All right.
Last night, Giancarlo Stanton hit his 300th career home run.
That took a while.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, well,
To get from 299
to 300. Yeah, it didn't take him long to get from zero to 300, but it was that actual last one. But I mean, even still with that, you see the long fly balls that he was hitting, the long foul balls that he was hitting. He is a force to be reckoned with. And then, of course, in true Yankees fashion, if you can't beat him, add him and stash him to your bench.
Definitely.
Which is what they're doing now.
Right.
So Andrew McCutchen, who I would swear is older than 31, but apparently is not. McCutchen is now a Yankee, and I'm really not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah, that's a little bit tough to stomach, but it does seem to happen every year where they add a player like that, all-star caliber, you know, former MVP-type player, either that type of outfielder, corner, infielder, or pitcher, or both. They always seem to do it.
Right.
And, you know, usually on these trades, you see two lower-level minor leaguers, you know, guys who you just really don't expect much to come out of. I thought it was noteworthy that the minor leaguer the Yankees sent to San Francisco looks legit. He's 23-year-old Abiatal Avellino. And this year, between AA and AAA, he's hit .287 with 15 homers and 66 RBIs, which are actually better numbers than McCutchen. And
right.
Obviously, McCutchen's been doing it at the big league level.
Right.
But he's only batting .255 with 15 and 55 this year. So a little bit of a down year by his standards.
Right. Well, he's had a handful of down years in a row. I remember last year, right before the trading deadline, the Pirates were talking about unloading him, and he had caught fire a little bit the week before, and they said, well, looks like we're going to keep him. He wound up hitting about .280 last year. So McCutchen has been good and productive. This year as a Giant, not quite as productive. But then again, why am I blanking on the name? Where do the Giants play now?
Pac Bell?
Pac Bell's not a thing anymore. I almost called it 3Com. I don't know. Wherever the Giants play in that stadium in San Francisco.
That overlooks the water?
With the water and things. whatever that stadium is called is not as easy of a place to hit as, for example, PNC.
Right.
So, you know, but I'm curious to see what he does in Yankee Stadium with that short porch around and left as well. He's one guy I've rooted for him his entire career. Love watching him play. Love the joy that he brings to the game. So, at least down the stretch, I'm looking forward to the opportunity to see him. And I don't know, you get it. It seems like every year with the big money teams, with the Dodgers and the Yankees, where they make that late season acquisition and just stash the guy.
Yeah.
And the guy that gets stashed, like in the Dodgers case, is Brian Dozier, who's productive in his own right, hadn't had a great year for the Twins. They dumped him, and the Dodgers have him. And Dozier, they just kind of fit him in wherever. But again, it's an abundance of riches for the Dodgers team. The rich get richer, and the poor, like the Twins, just basically unload everybody from their roster and see what they can get and hope that whatever they get is good.
Yeah, and of course, the impetus for this from the Yankees' perspective is that Aaron Judge has been out for a while with the wrist injury. But we got to take a moment to project Stanton, as painful as it is to talk about a Yankee like this. He's the fifth youngest to get to 300 homers, and he's only 28. Everybody remembers the huge contract that he signed, but I didn't realize how far into we were. He still has 9 years left on that deal.
Yeah.
He signed through 2027. Over the past 8 years, he's averaged 35 homers a year. If he averages 35 homers a year for the next nine for the rest of that contract, that'll be another 315. He'll be at 615 home runs.
Bye.
And I would certainly predict that he'll hit the 600 homer mark.
I would be shocked if he didn't. The other thing is, assuming that he stays with the Yankees, and why wouldn't you? Because that's a massive contract for somebody else to take on. You get to the point where he's 33, 34, and he's your DH. if not sooner. And that only preserves him a bit, and allows him to keep up that production. So, I mean, he's a beast.
He's averaged 35 homers over the last 8 years, but over the last two, he's hit 90.
Right.
He had 57 last year, 33 this year, and of course, we're not even done with this season. But it's crazy that he got the 200 homer mark 2 years ago, and he's already at 300. So he'll be hitting more than 35 homers a year here in the prime of his career.
No, I would figure. And then Stanton, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, he also got scholarship offers from UCLA, UNLV, and USC to play football. Would have been a nice
tight end
wide receiver, just absolute beast. But speaking of the two sport guys, because you and I grew up with Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders, and we've talked about those guys and their ability to basically do whatever it is on a field. Another guy is going to be starting a quarterback for the Oklahoma Sooners this year, and that's Kyler Murray, who was taken, 33 spots ahead of New Hampshire's favorite, Grant Levine, and will play this season at Oklahoma, and then will move on and play minor league ball and not play professional football, not follow in the footsteps of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, it's fun to kind of learn about some of the other first and second round picks in this year's Major League Draft and compare them to Grant and just to understand their story a little bit. I mean, these are either just tremendous baseball players at this age or tremendous athletes like Murray or both. And I just find it fascinating that he and Scott Boras were able to negotiate this deal with Oakland where, as the number 8 overall pick, his signing bonus was over $4 million. And Oakland agreed, yes, you can go back and play football at the highest level this year at Oklahoma. That's fine. And then come play baseball for us after this. I mean, there's got to be some insurance policies.
I was going to say, what kind of insurance do you think is backing that thing up?
Yeah, but it's a very unique arrangement. Even Scott Boras said in all his years of negotiating contracts, he's never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it's a good move for him, in my opinion. It's you have a chance for a lot more longevity. Major League Baseball is doing well. They are bringing in new fans, making every effort to do so, and really doing a nice job with trying to expand the game. And one thing to expand, I'm like the king of the segues today.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
You're on top of your game.
I must be. One thing that they've done to expand the game is expanding it to women. My wife and daughter had the chance to go down to Florida this past week for the Women's World Cup, which they were inspired by. A good number of the umpires are women. So there's a lady named Perry Barber who's been doing it for a long time, who Perry was at all the games, and she'll be umpiring a regional girls tournament down in New Jersey next month, or this month if you're listening on Saturday, which why wouldn't you be? So she was there. And then in addition to that, you have a bunch of women who have really solid sports resumes who are playing on the field. And the funny thing is you have the U.S. team, which is kind of the equivalent, almost if you think of Field of Dreams, when Moonlight Graham, when they pick him up and he says, there are towns where they'll get you a job and so you can play baseball during the day. It's almost like that. These aren't people who are making Mike Stanton money. These are people who have regular jobs. They're teachers, they're baseball instructors, they're what have you. And they go and they play in these tournaments and they come right back to whatever their reality is. But the two teams that are facing off for the world championship, Japan and Chinese Taipei, both of those countries have professional women's baseball. So, of course, there's going to be a better subset of people because these are people that are able to do it all year long as a profession, as opposed to I'm able to just sneak it in whenever I can around whatever my day job is.
Yeah, and it's fun to see that we've got the bronze medal game today, right? We're taping this on Friday morning. U.S. plays in the bronze medal game this afternoon.
Correct.
And then the gold medal game is the matchup that you just described.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch. U.S. and Canada are both very good teams. Canada's a bit younger of a team. It's all on YouTube, so you can watch it live on YouTube. It's, as a baseball fan, I can tell you that there are things that are different. It's a more of a small ball type game, although there are girls putting it out of the yard.
And they hit with aluminum.
They hit with aluminum. They are, you know, the girls or the women pitchers will throw 72 to 75. There is some absolutely filthy off-speed stuff. Like some of the curveballs that you see, it's just, you or I would look absolutely foolish trying to hit against these things. I mean, it's a 12 to 6, but it's really dropping. So there's a lot of break there, not to mention there's a nice drop in velocity between the fastball and the curveball. So it is a lot of fun to watch the game, and they are most certainly doing the little things, which that's, as a baseball fan, that's what I want to see. I want going back to, well, I'm like, seriously, going back to the championship game that I got the chance to play in last Sunday. I want the little things. Like, it's fun to win a game by virtue of you get a guy on base, steal second, sack to third, sack fly home. That's when you're playing a game like that and you know that you can play it for that one run, it's an entirely different strategy than a bloop and a blast if you're trailing by one.
Yeah, I got to watch some of that, some of the highlights from YouTube, and I was watching the Japanese pitcher, and she was just as you described. She was favoring the off-speed pitch. They all had a lot of movement, and it was kind of funny where I was trying to calculate the velocity on her fastball, and I used the odometer in my car to do it, and I think it was about 115, 116 kilometers per hour. Everything on the telecast was kilometers
it's
per hour.
60 for 100, 6 for 10, so that she's like 69 miles an hour of the fastball.
Right.
So, yeah, you just have to sit there in your head and recalibrate. But it's fun to watch. Look it up on YouTube. And there are more and more girls and women playing baseball. It's, you know, why there ever was a baseball and a softball, it's a story for another day. There have been, believe it or not, books written about this. Albert Spalding was kind of the chief guy behind that there need to be two separate things. Because baseball was something that, to him, in his upbringing, defined him as a man. And he really made the push that women need, this is too rough of a game, which is funny to think about. Baseball, I had my wife ask me the other day, is baseball a contact sport? Depends.
It can be.
It can be. But it's, at that point in time, 100 and whatever years ago, it was, in his eyes, too rough of a game. Hence, its cousin, softball, was brought into the mix, and they are very different sports. So, with that said, we will be joined momentarily by somebody who, in her own right, has been a bit of a sports pioneer. We talked to her about playing at McKelvey way back when, and she is now the coach of the Bedford High women's soccer team, girls' soccer team. That would be Michelle Winning. We'll take a break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and we are joined by Bedford High girls soccer coach Michelle Winning, who was one of our frequent guests last year. Coach, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So how was summer for you? I know we were talking about it off air. It seems like the thing starts and then it ends. When did you guys start preseason, and did you get a chance to relax at all before that?
I took a lot of time to relax, actually. We started August 13th, but my family and I had lots of time to go up north and relax and just kind of regroup for the season to start.
It's always a tough part, just kind of turning it off, particularly when it's been on for so long. Of course, as we're talking to you, you are out at the field. It's been... Today we got a little bit of a break. It's like 75 degrees. I mean, this is perfect weather. But leading up to this, it's been 95, 100% humidity. Hansen knows what I'm talking about because he's an old Kansas guy. So am I. It feels like the Midwest. It's just gross and thick. You guys had a game cancel earlier this week. How has the heat impacted preseason and early season practices?
Yeah, it's been tough. Preseason's long anyways this year, but then when you add the heat in there with a couple cancellations to start, the girls are just ready to play. And then, you know, we couldn't go outside for that game. They tried to push it back, and girls were amped up to play, and they just kind of got frustrated. They wanted to practice, and we couldn't practice. So now that the game is tonight, practice last night was solid. They were into it. They're totally ready to go. But, yeah, it's been a tough week for them. You know, starting school in this heat's been brutal. They're pretty tired and just ready to play some games.
Yeah, I'm excited for you, Coach, and the rest of the team to have this day that we have today. It's the first day of the year that's felt like fall is upon us, and it feels like the perfect time.
That's true.
I was going to say, don't worry, it'll be 90 again next week.
Maybe, yeah. But at least for tonight, it's like we're taping this on Friday. It's the perfect soccer weather to get the season underway. But we were curious about, as you've gone through this preseason, looking ahead to this season, X's and O's, how have you determined what type of formation you use on the field? And do you like to change the formation during the course of a season based on the opponent, or do you like to stick with one?
Yeah, I typically start the season with the same formation that we typically use that works for us. And then I kind of look at the personnel and see if it's going to work. And up until the Exeter scrimmage the other day, I thought that this formation would work, and then my personnel didn't really match with it. So I do have to do some figuring and some thinking in the first couple games to see if this is what we're going to stay with. I don't like to change for opponents. We may tweak a couple things or move, you know, just bump positions a little bit more forward or back to compensate. But we really want to stay consistent so that the girls are comfortable out there and not always changing it up. But time will tell if we stick with what we're used to and if we can play our style of play with the personnel that we have.
Laura, did you notice that she didn't give away what the formation is?
No, I'm glad she didn't, too. She knows. She knows.
I mean, I think everybody kind of knows what we play anyways. Yeah, we don't need
just,
to talk
just
about
in
that
case.
It's the formation that shall not be named.
Just in case they don't know.
Formation we name later. We're here with Bedford High girls soccer coach Michelle Winning. As we discussed, you opened the season today, and they're familiar names, Mackenzie McEachran, Gabrielle DeAngelis. What are your expectations from the team on the offensive side of the ball?
That's where we kind of struggled the other day, actually. So we're typically kind of fast, and we get our offense from our speed with someone that can possibly finish. The expectations there are to finish a few more than last year, I think, because we struggled. So hoping that we can get some distribution out of the middle with DeAngelis and Shayna Salas. Ellie Flynn may see some time in there. Olivia Tulin will get some time in there they can distribute, and we can counter pretty quickly.
Yeah,
I don't think we'll score a ton of goals, but I don't think we'll give up a ton of goals either.
I was going to say, on D, of course, you have Brianna Coco, who's one of the top defenders in the region, the reigning Gatorade Player of the Year. She's one that will impact the rest of the D, but looking at it, you have to make some changes because you have a keeper in Lauren Johnson that graduated from last year.
Yeah, and that's a big change for us. Just confidence-wise, Caitlin Hernack's going to step in there and she'll do a great job. But the defense is what feels that right now. I think they feel a bit of pressure because Lauren just had such a presence back there. Between Bree and Gabby Forte at center back, they've stepped up and been leaders and you know, Brianna, it's like having a coach out there. She knows me well enough to know exactly what I expect. She's coaching the other girls around her, and if I ask her to do something off the field, it just gets done. Jess O'Brien's back there, too, so there's three seniors in the back that have some leadership that we can hopefully compensate for the change in goalkeeper. But I think over time, Caitlin will step into that role. She's already progressing, and I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, it's when we saw Lauren last year, too, you see her back there, but more importantly, you would hear her back there.
Yeah, and she came off her line so aggressively that that shied some teams away. So it's a huge difference, and it will change the style of play and maybe hold us back from our attack a little bit. But in time, we're going to have to get that part of our attack back. You know, we like to use those outside backs, and they're going to have to spring at some point and be comfortable back there.
We are joined by Michelle Winning, the girls' soccer coach at Bedford High School. And last season, we're not going to talk much about the end of the season. What's the team's goal for this year? You have a lot of really experienced players that have been there. What's their goal to kind of cap things off after the season?
Yeah, we usually talk about that really early, but with the big changes that we haven't really set a goal yet. I think after game one, we'll know our expectations a little bit better. Get through a week or two and then say, all right, where do we think we're at? What can we work towards? I think they would be disappointed at this point if they didn't make it to the finals, but that's such a high expectation to set. I would never put that on them. You know, I don't think some of these girls haven't been anywhere else but in the finals.
Right.
So, yeah, I would say for me, Final Four is something I always kind of hope for. And then getting to that championship game is a bonus, and we've been fortunate enough to get there. But the team, we haven't brought that up yet. They're not really in the mental place to do that with big change with Lauren and a couple of other people. So when the timing's right, I can get back to you on that.
Yeah, there have been some new players, and of course, losing a goalie is a big deal, particularly somebody who's experienced like that. There are newcomers, and you mentioned somebody who's not a newcomer, but she's still young in Olivia Tulin, who was a freshman last year and got a good amount of playing time as a freshman. Who are the other newcomers that we can expect to see making an impact on the field this year?
Yeah, we have freshman Taryn Naftali. She'll start for me. Either an outside back or a winger. She brings a lot of speed and a lot of...
Did we lose her? She's dialing a number. Coach, are you there? We lost her talking about Taryn Naftali, and then we heard some numbers. Is that the first time that's ever happened?
I think so.
And there's another number. We might have to try this again. While I dial...
You know, she's,
as we leave this going,
she's been talking about speed a lot.
Yep.
And we got cut off there talking about newcomers. And I don't know if she noticed or other soccer fans noticed, but Usain Bolt, the world-class sprinter, is playing professional soccer now.
Is he really?
In Australia. He just had his first game this week. And so I'm...
Are you there, Coach?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
All right. We lost you at Taryn Naftali.
Taryn Naftali, okay.
Yes.
So Taryn Naftali, she'll get some time at outside back or winger. You'll see Ellie Flynn step up.
You there? Did we lose you again? It sounded like she muted herself. Coach, are you there? It's funny because I can still hear the background.
Yeah, she's got to be there somewhere.
Yes, she's here somewhere. Usain Bolt.
Yeah, I want to ask her about Usain Bolt.
We're going to try one again. What have you seen from Mr. Bolt, gold medal winner?
He's easing himself into the lineup in Australian professional soccer, playing about 20 minutes a game. But to try and convert his speed into something that a soccer team can use, you know, that's
Hello?
What I'm curious about.
All right, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, cool. I think we got a good amount. It was weird. We lost you, but we could hear the background.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, bizarre. So you said Ellie Flynn, Taryn Naftali. So, I mean, it sounds like you have some players that are ready to step in and fill some roles, too.
Yeah, definitely. There's not a question about that. It's just where to put them. And like you said earlier, like what's going to work for the personnel we have in terms of formation to make us the most productive offensively.
Right. And
Coach, you've been talking about speed a lot, getting your offense from speed. And I don't know if you noticed, you've been locked into your team building, but the world-class sprinter Usain Bolt just started a professional soccer career in Australia, and of course they're trying to incorporate his speed into the team and try and benefit from it. How do you actually specifically like to use your speed? Do you like to use speed on the outside with the wingers? Do you like speed for your striker, or is it just speed all over the field?
Well, typically we've kind of had speed all over the field so that we can have everybody engage in the attack. Definitely need it at the winger spot, which was missing when we played Exeter. So we made some changes to try to bulk up speed there a little bit. We have speed with McKenzie up top, or if I put Shayna up top. And, you know, all over the field, Brianna Coco is fast in the center as our center back, and that's what kind of scoops up some of our mistakes right there. So I think people are used to us having speed, and we just have to keep that because that's how we – Now that's how we're going to sneak in there and put some goals in the back of the net.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to watching the team play today. It's 4 o'clock against Merrimack at home. Of course, nobody's going to be able.
They changed that. It's 6:30 now. 6:30 at home against Merrimack.
Awesome. Okay, that makes it even better. It might be easier to sneak over there now. And the show will not air before then, so hopefully some of our listeners have made it that way. But as always, we appreciate the time, and you know that we'll hit you up for some more interviews throughout the season. So thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you. Nice to talk to you guys.
It's good to talk to you. That was Bedford High girls soccer coach Michelle Winning. We'll take a quick break and come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen, and we are joined by Bedford High football coach Derek Stank. Coach, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
I can't believe, like I said, we just had Michelle Winning on. I can't believe that we are at the cusp of fall and that we're already talking about football and soccer. It's just summer feels like it went by in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, it was a nice summer, but it went by quick, and here we are, ready to rock and roll.
Awesome. So last season, the injury bug hit. The big name that got hit with it was senior quarterback Connor Robert, but the silver lining is you had Thomas Morgan, who got some time under center. He's heading into his senior year. What are your expectations for him at quarterback this year?
Well, yeah, last year he got thrown into the Wolves pack. He was really he was a raw quarterback, and he got put right into the thick of an Exeter game, and then he had to go right to Goffstown the next week. So it was a tough learning curve for him and us as a program. But at the end of the day, we came out stronger on the other side. He really found himself as a QB by the time we got to the end of the season. Our offense started clicking better. So going into this season, you know, it's definitely an advantage at this point. He's done a very good job over the offseason in the spring, all through the summer, individual trainings, camps, et cetera. And we're excited to have him running our offense this season.
That's awesome. Good athlete, comes from a very good athletic family. Of course, we're familiar with his sister from basketball. I actually coached his younger brother in baseball this summer. So, it'll be fun to watch him and watch him take advantage of that opportunity. And another one who has been fun to watch develop has been Ryan Toscano. We had him on the program in spring, and he'll be playing on both sides of the ball again this year. An impressive kid on the field, very impressive off the field as well. What is it like having a senior leader like Ryan on your team?
You know, it's great. I mean, we lost two out of our three running backs last year. Thomas Norfleet and Dimitri Aganoff both graduated and moved on. But Ryan Toscano was one of those three. And to have him back now as our premier back with a handful of other good backs behind him is a good thing. From a defensive side of the ball, you know, he's moved in from that free safety spot all the way up to the outside linebacker, so he's given us the ability to have a little bit more strength on the edge. All right, but then we can still send him into coverage when we're running blitzes and so on. So he's a great leader. He's a captain of our program with four other guys, and you know, he's put in the work. He was probably 195 pounds last year. He's 210. He's faster, stronger, bigger, and he's like you said, off the field. He's got a 4.3 GPA, so he's a very smart individual. He knows the game. And it's always nice to be giving that ball to him majority of the time.
So, Coach, I'm curious, what will the offensive focus this year be? Will it be run heavy, you know, centered around Ryan, or will it be pass heavy or more of a balanced attack?
We're going to be a 100% perfect balanced attack. at the end of the day, you always want to establish the run. And if we have an offensive line, which I feel like we have a good offensive line, a couple new faces, a couple fresh bodies, they have to catch on to the speed that the varsity game is played at. But if we can use them with a good running quarterback and a good running back to establish the run, obviously that's gonna set the foundation for your entire offensive program. From there, we obviously need to keep them honest. We need to move through the air, and we have some good wideouts. We got Lucian Mompini out there. We've got Harrison Legoulon. We've got a couple other younger guys stepping in. So to be able to spread that ball through the air is going to be important also, whether that's simple bubbles or whether it's downfield fades. As a whole, it's always the offense's, you know, goal to be balanced, to not let the defense know what their hand is pre-snap and what we're going to be doing and tendencies. But like anything else, those things will develop also.
It's interesting you mentioned some of these names, and we're with Bedford High football coach Derek Stank. We know Harry Legoulon from basketball, doing a number of play-by-play for those games last year. But to hear people talk about him as a wideout, he's one who is certainly a playmaker. He's got some speed. Mumpini is another one who can change the game. Who else should fans look out for if they're watching the Bedford Bulldogs on the gridiron?
From an offensive standpoint?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it starts with our three senior offensive linemen. Timmy Galamaga is our left tackle. He's been a starter at right tackle for the last 2 years. This will be his third year now. He's looking to play at the next level. He's got a couple offers on the line already. So he's going to be at 6'4", 285, a good threat for us on the left side. You know, we've got Jacoby Collins, our right guard, a small, feisty, 220-pound wrestling-style guard. Loves to hit. Has got a lot of strength. So he's going to be our right guard, another three-year starter for us. And then we have a left guard who's coming in as a senior also, Cole Wheeler. Our center is fresh to the game from a varsity standpoint, Charlie Canisa-Williams. But by no means, when you look at him and you watch him play, does he look fresh. He's a solid 5'10", maybe cresting that 5'11", but he's 285 pounds. He's got a 470-pound squat. His center of gravity is exactly where you want it for an offensive lineman, and he's able to get underneath guys and get movement. And then our right tackle, still a little bit up in the air, but we got two guys, Drew Allard and Torrey Helton, competing for that spot. Both of them, you know, 1270, 1310, 6'4". So some big-sized guys in that offensive line. So, you know, I'm an offensive line and defensive line coach. I'll always pride our offense and defense on what those guys do first and foremost. And they allow the secondary guys to get all the stats and make all the plays and ultimately get the ball in the end zone. So, you know, I think, you know, the two wideouts that we have, it's Harry and Lucian. They're the big threats. We've got Green out on the outside, and we've got some other guys fighting for the other spot. Ryan Donahue coming back as a senior, making a presence for himself. You know, and then, you know, we've got, like I said, we've got Mikey Axton at running back. We've got Sonny at running back, and we've got Jack Rogan at running back. So we've got a couple guys in different areas if we need them, but I think the core of our offense is really around our quarterback, our running back, our offensive line, and the two big wideouts for us.
Coach, it's fun to hear you talk about the offensive line that much, because it's often an overlooked part of the analysis in football, and it's fascinating to hear about the athleticism that Charlie has, you know, anchoring the line in the middle. But how important is it, you know, as a newcomer to be the center? You know, how important is the communication and the intelligence that he has to have to, you know, orchestrate the teamwork by the line?
Absolutely. It's of the essence. It's very important. You know, Charlie's a smart kid. He's a good kid. He's a quick learner. And, you know, I don't have much of a fear that he's not going to be able to do the job. And he's already stepped in over his two scrimmages, and we're up and running just like we had Josh Colmore, and just like the year before that, we had Bobby Heald. And I've been fortunate to have these centers that have been in two-year stints. I get them as sophomores. I mean, for me, I really want my best offensive lineman when it comes to, you know, the mental side of it, the physical side of it, and ultimately the ability to snap the ball successfully on a regular basis. To be that center position. We see so many five-man fronts where they got a big nose tackle over top. You know, we had to deal with Goffstown's nose tackle for the last 3 years. And unless you have a center that can handle that guy on somewhat of a one-on-one basis, when you got to put two guys on that nose tackle every single time, that means a backer's free. So, you know, it's very important to have a center that can communicate and set the foundation. The good news is I got a left tackle that's a three-year starter. I got a right guard that's a three-year starter. So we got some surrounding guys around that O-line that know how to communicate. You know, our offense, zone-based offense, simple concepts, but hard to execute when you get different defenses. The communication has to be essential. They're coming off the backers and they're communicating. So, you know, I think we're in a good spot, but obviously there's still going to be some growing pains as we go through the beginning parts of the season.
It's and going back to the thought about the offensive line, you have a quarterback who, even though he was in the crucible last year against Exeter and Goffstown, it's nice when you have guys in front of him that are some big workhorses that can give him a little bit of a little bit more time to adjust to some of the speed that he might see from the other teams.
Absolutely, and you know, I make the analogy all the time. You know, you can put Tom Brady back in our backfield as our quarterback, and if we don't have a single lineman that can block for him, protect for him, it's not going to matter. Nothing good is going to come out of that. So we've got to have that offensive line to set the foundation, especially in high school football, where running the ball is such an important part to find success. You're just not going to be able to get, you know, 40 passes a game on a regular basis. Most teams, it's just not in their wheelhouse of something that they can do. So got to be able to run the ball, and it starts with the big boys up front.
Absolutely. So for the Bedford High football team, what dates are circled on the calendar for this year? Any specific games that you're thinking about, looking forward to more than others?
This Friday night, Nashville North. That's the one on the calendar.
Yep,
right now.
That's the good. That's the right answer.
I'm a Coach Mac Bourne and Brett.
I forgot about that. Yes,
and if you look one game ahead, you're going to find yourself in trouble. So all we care about at the end of every single week is we want to know at the end of that week.
Yep.
So I honestly, half the time, I couldn't tell you who we play the next week, and I definitely couldn't tell you who we play in 2 weeks from now.
That's great.
I'm focusing on this team. When we get by this one, then we'll move on to the next one.
That's an admirable approach. Get the next one, then on to the next one. The last question I have, and we're with Coach Derek Stank, the coach of the Bedford High football team. My daughter's in seventh grade, and this whole concussion, baseline testing and all that sort of stuff was new to me. Obviously, it's nothing that they did back when I was in high school and college. It was, you get whacked in the head, go right back after it. How much has the attention that's paid, and it's a good thing for these kids, obviously, because you can operate on a knee, a brain is an entirely different thing. How much has that impacted what you do day to day with the players?
Very much so. And, you know, I was kind of in that transition as a player and a coach myself where, you know, I grew up playing in 2001. I went to UNH, became a coach in 2007 for Bedford. And, you know, there wasn't close to as much talk. You knew of concussions. They were real. You looked out for them. But the level of awareness and the heightened sensitivity to these concussions, it's definitely increased, and for a good reason. So, you know, from a day-to-day basis, one, we do not hit close to as much as we do, did before. I mean, the old days of the hoot and hollers and the Oklahomas, and let's get three guys, line them up, cross from each other, let two can hit each other, knock each other over, you know, a couple guys in the middle, go after each other. It doesn't happen anymore. Quite frankly, I mean, 90% of our tackling is helmetless tackling. We adapted the hut tackling that UNH does, kind of like the Seahawk tackling, and we're wrapping up and we're rolling on bags without helmets and shoulder pads on to get used to keeping your head out of the work. And that's essential. You know, if we don't change the way we coach this sport will disappear. It will evolve and it will change. And, we don't want that. You know, there's so many good lessons that can be taught by playing football that aren't just, you know, how to tackle someone. You know, that's not really what we're teaching here. The discipline, the structure, you know, the foundation for developing these young men into the individuals they're going to be for the rest of their lives, family members, fathers, husbands. You know, we teach a lot of that stuff in this sport. And I'm a coach of other sports. I've coached track. I've done a bunch of other things. And, you know, I think there's something special about this game and what it requires in order to be successful. And, you know, I don't want to see it go by the wayside. I don't want to see it go away because people are fearful that you can't play the sport and stay safe. You know, you can play the sport and stay safe. You know, you have to have a safe coach. You've got to, you know, make good decisions. You've got to make sure your athletes understand the importance of protecting themselves. And, you know, yeah, they want to go up and make the play, but they got to do it in the right, appropriate way with the proper technique. And if we do that, I think we'll see, you know, the concussion scare, I almost say, start to go back down, start to have a realization that, hey, this sport can be played safely. You know, all sports, all things you do, there's a risk of injury.
Absolutely.
You know, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're doing the right things, the risk can be diminished to a reasonable amount. And I think that's where we're at right now. And I hope that, you know, the community of Bedford and the communities and the states across the country can realize that, you know, coaches are evolving. The sport is evolving. You know, the amount of times that we go full pad, it's minimal in comparison to what we used to do. And, you know, we're playing a safer game. You know, Friday nights, those things are still going to happen and the big hits are going to occur. But, you know, there's no more blindside. You blindside someone and you get that tackle, that lights out hit, you know, where it used to be on the highlight film, you are getting flagged for that. You can't do that anymore. And for good reason. We just can't put people in those situations. It's risking their health and it's risking the future of this sport.
That's a wonderful answer, said with passion. I wish I had some eligibility left. It's heartening to hear you're a steward of the sport, and there are having coached a lot of baseball for a lot of years. That you always want your sport to grow. You want your sport to continue to thrive. And you realize that if you're not passing down a love of the game and a way that the kids that you coach can teach it to the next generation of kids, the game will die. And it's great to hear that you've embraced that attitude. It really is a sea change, but it's got to start with guys like you who are making it happen and passing it on to the next generation.
Yep. And it takes a family. So we're going to get it done.
It absolutely does. Well, Coach, thank you for the time. We're not going to ask about any further games. Good luck tonight against Nashua North. And we'll see you soon out on the field and hope to talk to you soon on the air one of these days.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for having me.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Take care, Coach.
That was Coach Derek Stank of the Bedford High football program. We'll take a quick break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Always good to catch up with a couple coaches and hear their passion for the game. Our thanks to Coach Derek Stank of the Bedford High football program, Coach Michelle Winning of the Bedford High soccer program. It's fun. It's nice to hear people who are invested in the game and invested in the kids who are out there on the field with them every day.
Yeah, the passion came through, and it's an exciting time of year. Season openers tonight for both teams. We're taping this on Friday, and it really helps get some excitement for the fall. We're there.
It makes me want to go to a game or two. You can only pick one tonight. You got either soccer or football tonight. So that said, Little League World Series just finished up. Could you imagine if you're one of the kids that you could theoretically, if you're from like Florida, Georgia, spend your entire summer playing baseball? And you finish, and then you're back to school on Monday or Tuesday. Or you've already been in school for a few weeks.
That would be a strange transition to go from Williamsport to first period.
Well, Williamsport to Hawaii. You know, I think of it when I look at, like, the Dodgers have Kenley Jansen. Great pitcher.
It used to be.
He's issues out of his control, physical issues. But he's from Aruba, and for most people, getting to be paid millions of dollars and go live in L.A. would be a great thing. And I look at a dude from Aruba, and I go, would you really want to go live in L.A. with all the smog and wildfires and everything that's going on? Or would you rather just shack up in a ridiculous mansion in Aruba?
Well,
like Andrew Jones, who is from Curacao, and played his entire career, well, Atlanta and then New York. Like, that's a step down. And so you think about the Hawaiian kids who, all right, you just won everything in your regional and your prizes, you get to go to Pennsylvania for like 2 weeks.
Well, you know, for Jansen and Andrew Jones, I mean, they're making enough money while they're up here in the U.S. that they can go back to those places and have their mansion later. And that's not a bad path. But for these kids from Hawaii, Georgia, all across the country, Williamsport is a mecca.
I lied. As Kenley Jansen is from Curacao.
Okay.
Yes. All right. We got that.
Duly noted.
Anyway, yes.
But, I mean, it's a mecca for those kids.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, it's got to have a magical feel when you get there because you have watched it on TV year in and year out. You've dreamt of going there. And I think that they must have, you know, a whole new level of enthusiasm to get there and be a part of that. And, you know, the baseball is just one part, but the culture of that World Series and the interaction between the players as opponents, the players with the opponent team's fans. I mean, it's just a really special cauldron of athleticism that comes together and we get to see every year.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. The thing that tends to drive me nuts about it is sometimes you get the same sort of storylines over and over and over again. And who was it? Somebody brought it up. It was yesterday, I think, on ESPN. Scott Van Pelt actually said it. They had the kid from New Jersey, Big Al. And he said, This is what we do. We tend to bring, I love this kid. He's so great. We tend to bring these kids out, and then all of a sudden everybody gets sick of him. I really hope nobody's sick of him yet. And I'm sick of him.
Yeah.
I got an overdose of Big Al the first week of the Little League World Series, and I went, I'm okay. I know who you are. I know you hit dingers. I'm all set now. I'm good.
Yeah.
Can we move on? Because the Hawaiian kids are way more entertaining.
Right, right. Well, the Hawaiian kids hit dingers.
The Hawaiian kids absolutely hit dingers.
They also rack up Ks.
Right. Yeah.
You know, in that U.S. championship game, Kea, who had that walk-off homer against Georgia earlier in the World Series, he had 15 Ks, complete game shutout. And then they turn around the next day against South Korea, and Holt has the complete game shutout as Hawaii wins their third Little League World Series in really exciting.
In like 15 years, they've won three.
Yeah, and in dominant fashion. They outscored their opponents 26-3 over their five World Series games.
Yeah, they were fun to watch. Good players, good attitude. Yeah, it's just, I enjoy watching kids who just seem to understand what this is about. And I realize, obviously, it's an emotional thing for these kids to go out there. And I joked about it. Okay, you go through your entire summer and it's nothing except baseball, and people wonder, well, the kids are crying, you know, they lose, why are they crying? They've accomplished so much. When you're 12 years old, it's difficult to rationalize that I gave up my entire summer and it it didn't end with the championship. It's hard to look back at it at that moment. But some of those kids, like I talked about last week, Jaron Purifoy from Grosse Pointe Woods was one that I absolutely enjoyed watching. There were a good number that you just watch these kids and you go, they play with joy. And you just want more kids to, going back to like what Coach Stank said, you want more kids to play the game and continue to grow the game. And that starts with really enjoying the game. If you don't really enjoy it, you're not going to sign your kid up. And you have no incentive to ever sign up to coach if you didn't think that Little League was fun.
Yeah, it's a tremendous amount of fun. And baseball is a great learning experience for these kids. I mean, they learn about success and failure in that sport like in no other. But the thing about the Little League World Series specifically is that it is the ultimate world competition.
Yeah.
I mean, only one Little League team in the world is, you know, ending their season in the playoffs with a win, and it's the team from Hawaii. And that's just what's so amazing about it, that, you know, they rose to the top of the mountain, and everybody else has to take the lesson of, well, we didn't get to where Hawaii did, but, you know, for Georgia, they got to the U.S. championship game. For everybody else in that bracket, they made it to Williamsport. You know, for the teams in the regionals, well, they got through their state championship and they got to the regionals. And so, you just have to take what you can from however far you got and learn as many lessons from it as you can.
Absolutely. And you think back to the Bedford team from back in 1993 that wound up as the national runners-up. And those guys will still talk fondly about it. And this is, what, 25 years later that they're still talking about it and thinking about it. And they have bonds that will never go away. And it's part of being on a team. And that's really what it is that is different from a regular sort of friendship. These are guys that, you know, all right, something happens, they pick you up in the dugout.
And that they should. Those guys from 93, they should talk about it. And I just want to mention that I actually lost a friend from my Little League All-Star team from that age range last weekend. Great teammate throughout high school named Ryan Lawrence, and he passed away early due to an illness. And so it has brought back all those Little League memories. And, you know, the bonds you make, they do last a lifetime, and just there's nothing quite like it.
So on that note, let's talk about the U.S. Open. in case you missed it, and maybe you did, maybe you didn't, one of my favorite commercials of all time popped up earlier this week. Did you see the Serena Williams commercial? Did I send that to you?
No.
Okay, so she is on the courts, I'm guessing in Compton, where she grew up with her dad, and her dad is instructing her, and he's telling her to have a perfect service motion just like you're in the U.S. Open. And somehow, I mean, somebody got this on video at that point, and he... Have you ever, I mean, I know Richard Williams as tennis dad, but he was taking tennis lessons from a guy in Shreveport, Louisiana, and wrote a 78-page plan for Venus and Serena for how they were going to become tennis champions.
Wow.
It sounds like it was a pretty good plan.
Sounds like there must have been some effective content in that plan.
It's just like... It's just amazing. But again, you watch this commercial. It's, I don't think it's more than a 30-second commercial, but it's him in this video from, it's got to be the late 80s. And Serena's got this huge smile on her face and she's playing tennis. And it's his voice from then over U.S. Open highlights over the last however many years. And it's him saying that to her. And it closes with him saying, good job, Serena Williams. So it's just this nice, going back to coaching, this nice encouraging thing. And, you know, it's not always like that. Nobody in their right mind can tell you that every time you ever coached your kid, it's been encouraging. As much as I'd love to lie to you and tell you that it is, it isn't. There are always going to be hard days. And there are going to be days that you just go, what am I doing? And I'm sure there are days that my kids go, what am I doing? But it's, there are lessons to be learned from the good days and the bad days, probably more from the bad days than the good ones.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talk about a unique form of competition like the Little League World Series, and that's what we've got tonight with Serena and Venus matching up again.
Oh, dude, yes.
The third round of the U.S. Open.
That might be the only thing that stops me from going to watch the girls' soccer team tonight.
Yeah. I mean,
is Venus and Serena.
That's one of the most unique matchups in the history of sports. And, you know, what a clash between those two sisters who have pushed each other, you know, under the supervision of their father as their coach, as you're talking about growing up. Together, they've won 30 majors. And the fact that they've been so successful, sort of intertwined, you know, it's one of the stats that jumped out at me is they have faced off in the finals of every Grand Slam. They have met in the finals of
all
four.
I didn't see
four.
That. Yeah.
And so it's a little bit disappointing that they're meeting in the third round.
Yeah, that to me, that was anticlimactic. That's too early. But, I mean, the seeding is weird for both of them.
It's really weird.
Well, it's just by nature, it's rankings. And Serena hasn't played enough to vault up yet. I mean, 116 and 117.
Yeah, but she's 26th or 27th in the world, Serena, and they bumped her to 17. I don't think that's enough. I mean, she was... just, you know, doing great at Wimbledon. I mean, she's got, most people say she's a favorite. So I don't know how you come
well,
up with 17.
Well, I mean, 17. You had Halep lose in the first round. That also makes for something interesting. So I hate to, like, Serena will win tonight. And she'll win in straight sets against Venus.
Maybe she'll let her get a set.
And if she
feels like it.
I don't know. Serena is a beast.
They don't have to deal with the 95 heat. So
no.
Maybe she won't mind playing an extra set.
She's a beast. She and I'm not the just competitiveness and the intelligence and like it's just amazing. And you watch that and you go, all right, it took a lot for her to get there. I was talking to somebody earlier this week, they said, and this is just indicative of what the great ones have to do. Stumbled, it's a mutual friend of both of ours, was at the U.S. Open. And I guess mutual means both anyway, but that's beside the point. At the U.S. Open, happened to walk through a tunnel and happened upon Nadal hitting before a match. And Nadal hit for an hour. And it was a workout that probably would have killed any of us.
Right.
And the guy is just hitting and getting yelled at by his coach, but this is part of the deal. Like, this is in order to be there and be that guy and realize, okay, I'm in the top five, but until I beat this guy, and this guy's Federer in that case, till I beat him over and over and over again. Like, I'm not looking at the one tournament. Top 10's not good enough. I'm looking at a legacy. And we've talked about this on the air. The fine gradations between 10 and 5 and 2 and 1 and the little things that you have to work on to get there, and having the right coach that looks at you and says, okay, you did this, but in that, and the rest of us would look at it and go, wow, this is amazing. And he's got a coach who's looking at it and goes, no, it stinks, and here's why.
I'm a little bit jealous to be able to get to watch Nadal in that type of a setting, because he is just, in terms of his athleticism, he's so fun to watch. He's such a role model. He just, it's crazy the way that he can, you know, dig deep and last for 5 hours plus in some of these Grand Slam semifinal matches. But, you know, that just gets us back to Serena and Venus. What a pair of role models for tennis, for women. They've just been tremendous. And, you know, hey, I guess we'd rather see them play in the semis or the finals, but, you know, at least we get to see it, you know, one more time in a major.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch. Looking forward to watching that tonight. And by the time this airs, it will have already happened, and we hope that you have the opportunity to watch it as well. So, as always, a lot going on around here. We wanted to thank the crew here at Bedford 105.1, Harry, Colleen, Bill, and Chris for everything that they do in allowing us to get on the air every week. And have a great sports week. For Andrew Hansen, I'm Lauren Fox. We'll catch you next time. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.